You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB At The Plate. MLB At The Plate airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on TuneIn.
Welcome into the MLB At The Plate podcast. I'm Paul Severino, today joined by Steve Lyons, and we're going to start the podcast out with the MLB At The Plate Triple Play, which is where Steve and I discuss three topics that interest us. And tonight, our Triple Play consists of discussions involving the trades between the Yankees and White Sox and Tigers and Diamondbacks, the injury that's going to sideline Carlos Correa for 6 to 8 weeks, and the young studs in Major League Baseball and how to promote them.
The MLB At The Plate Triple Play.
Still a couple of weeks away from the trade deadline, but a couple of big ones to get into as J.D. Martinez goes from the Detroit Tigers to the Arizona Diamondbacks. We'll get into that in a moment. And also, as our show is unfolding on a busy Tuesday night, we also learn that not only did Todd Frazier get scratched from the White Sox lineup, a healthy scratch, as they say in hockey, but everybody seemed to think that it was Boston, Boston, Boston. It made the most sense. Turns out it's not Boston at all. It is the New York Yankees, and it has become official. Todd Frazier, David Robertson going back to the Bronx Bombers, and hard-throwing reliever Tommy Kahnle all going to the Bronx in exchange for Tyler Clippard, who's had a rough month or so out of the Yankees bullpen. Blake Rutherford, who is an outfielder, number 3 prospect in the Yankees system. Ian Clarkin, a pitcher, number 19 prospect in the Yankees system. And Tito Polo. So again, we will talk about the J.D. Martinez deal in just a bit, but this is a little bit bigger of a move, a 7-player deal, White Sox and New York Yankees getting together. Steve Lyons, what do you think?
I don't really like the deal. You and I had talked about the fact that a lot of deadline deals are for guys that either you don't want to re-sign or are having a bad year, and in my opinion, Frazier's one of those guys. I mean, he's hitting about 200. He's got the home runs, but not hitting home runs like he did last year, I suppose. He's got the second half of the season hitting in Yankee Stadiums. Not the greatest place in the world for a right-handed power hitter to be hitting, although it's a much better place to hit right-handed than it used to be. Robertson goes back. He's a guy. He's, to me, I don't know enough about Kahnle to tell you what he's going to be able to do for them. Robertson, to me, seems to be the biggest name in that deal. And then they get a bunch of prospects back to the White Sox, and the White Sox are stocking up on prospects right now, and they have to take Clippard in the deal as well.
Yeah, and what the White Sox are doing, speaking of just stacking that farm system, they've done it an awful lot with some other deals that they've made with the Boston Red Sox, of course, with the Washington Nationals, and they still perhaps might have a piece or two to move if they continue to do this. They did, and also with the Jose Quintana deal about a week or so ago, but maybe they move a Melky Cabrera, maybe there's another piece or two that we're not quite thinking about just yet, but we had heard Robertson as something of a no-brainer again from the outside to the Washington Nationals. The Yankees are able to acquire Robertson and keep him from Washington, a team that looks certainly pretty strong going into the running away with the National League East, that is. So Washington was looking for Robertson. Boston had been looking for Todd Frazier, and for all of those things that you put out there with the numbers, and you're absolutely right, it's one of those things where, again, like the number crunchers will go out there and figure out all the line drives and this, and he hits the ball. If you overlay, I heard this the other day too, if you overlay the ballparks of Guaranteed Rate Field and Fenway Park and all the balls that he hit at Guaranteed Rate, they'd be home runs or doubles at Fenway Park. So from that standpoint of the Yankees keeping the Red Sox from getting their team stronger, and also a spot where the Yankees have been kind of weak offensively and Chase Headley over at third, maybe there's something to like about it, even if it's not like the one game-changing type player for the New York Yankees, at least on the offensive side. But I'm totally with you. The Yankees, as other teams have done the last few years, they want to stockpile that bullpen and shorten games as much as they can. And for the Yankees rotation, which has been, you know, here and there at times this season, and obviously the bad news with Michael Pineda needing Tommy John surgery, to shorten games for that rotation with a much deeper bullpen, I think is also beneficial for the Bombers.
Yeah, maybe they should have worked on getting a 6th and 7th inning guy, because that's what they're going to be needing, someone who can get those guys out.
Yeah, there's no question about it. But so that's the Yankees White Sox getting together on a deal. That kind of happened as the games were going on Tuesday night. But before the first pitches around Major League Baseball, J.D. Martinez on the move from Detroit to the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he'll probably play a lot of left field with Pollock out there and Peralta in center and right, respectively. So what do you make of J.D. Martinez leaving Detroit for the D-backs?
Well, see, this is a deal that I do like. I mean, they strike before the trading deadline. So if you're the Arizona Diamondbacks, who had been losing some games and losing ground seriously to the Dodgers in the division, still within the wild card, obviously, and I just think the Dodgers are going to run away with that division, so you got to fight for second place. J.D. Martinez gets plunked right into middle of that lineup. He makes everyone in that lineup better. He's a threat. He's a great influence on the team and in the clubhouse, and they make this move before the deadline, so he gets there and he can help them long before. What are we talking about? Another 2 weeks or so before
weeks,
the
yeah.
deadline. So, you know, this is an excellent move for Arizona, and they're getting a quality, good player who's productive. I'm just really down on the deadline deals of guys that, oh, we don't want this guy anymore. We're not going to re-sign him, but maybe he'll help you. And, you know, some sucker of a team will take him.
<You know? laughs> It only takes one, as they say. What do you think this means, though, for the Detroit Tigers now? We it seemed like J.D. Martinez was as good as gone. They've got some other pieces out there, too. Justin Wilson figures to be on the move out of that bullpen. And then there's been those other big-ticket items, the Justin Verlanders and the Miguel Cabreras of the world. Do you think the Tigers get really creative with those guys or not?
You know, I don't... There's a lot of guys there to be moved if they want to move them all, and I would think that there'd be interest in every one of them. I mean, you're talking about Wilson and Verlander. I mean, these are guys that you'd love to have. Those aren't the guys that I was talking about before. It's like, who cares?
Right.
These are guys you'd love to have on your team. J.D. Martinez is one of those guys you want on your team. But can the Detroit Tigers dump everybody? Wow, that would be a pretty tough pill to swallow, but it's certainly, with this move, with J.D. Martinez being moved, it is the signaling of a team saying, we can't do it with what we've got right now.
And they've got to turn the page. So the Tigers begin perhaps that process with J.D. Martinez going to Arizona. Yankees and White Sox getting together on a deal as well. And it's Frazier, Robertson, and Canely going to the Yankees. Clippard, Rutherford, Clarkin, and Polo going to the Chicago White Sox. For the most part this season, the Houston Astros have played some great baseball, and they've had some injuries here and there, but nothing really too debilitating. But perhaps this one could be, and that's not to say that they're going to lose their stranglehold on the American League West. They've got a 15.5 game lead at the start of play on Tuesday. But here's the thing, is that Carlos Correa is now out for the next 6 to 8 weeks, torn ligament in his thumb. And it sounds like it's the same injury that kept Mike Trout out for 7.5 weeks. So, again, it all stemmed from a head-first slide. He kind of hurt the thumb that way and then was hit by a pitch, or I shouldn't say hit by a pitch, but swung and re-aggravated it last night. So it's a 10-day DL, but that's kind of eyewash at this point. It's sounding more like 6 to 8 weeks for Carlos Correa. If there is a team that can absorb a missing piece as great as him for as long as that may be, it stinks to say it, but I would imagine it's the Houston Astros.
Well, obviously the big lead in the division helps. I mean, this is not going to be a team that's going to have to panic and worry about a two-game division lead in late September. But I think if there's a silver lining here, there's a chance to get him back with a couple weeks to go in September, to get him, you know, maybe 14, 15, 16 games before headed into the playoffs and get him back and, you know, get his timing back a little bit. And they have Marwin Gonzalez. They have Alex Bregman that can also play shortstop for this ball club that guys can move over and fill in. So, you know, it's a huge blow, and it changes the way the complexion of their offense looks. But this is still a pretty darn good team without him.
Yeah, and he goes to the DL right around fifth in the American League in terms of batting average. And I know the Astros are probably the last team in baseball to worry about anybody's batting average, but the bottom line is this. He's an immense talent, and it's more than the average. It's the home runs, it's the speed, it's the defense, it's the whole package with this guy. So they will certainly miss him, but as you mentioned, they've got a lot of pieces to help them kind of absorb that blow, never mind the everyday lineup, but also the lead that they've got in that division, sizable at the start start of play on Tuesday. Now, that's the bad news. The good news, though, is that it sounds like Dallas Keuchel is on his way back. He had a rehab start at AA on Monday night. He claims that he's ready to go. Talking with Ned Colletti on the show last night, said, you know, what are you looking for in something like this? Because you're throwing the line score out the window. But it sounds as though, from all reports, that he is going to be good to go. You know, should the Astros get Dallas Keuchel back, that could also make the loss of Carlos Correa look a little bit more minimal.
Yeah, you get a Cy Young guy back. I mean, you know, each organization is very, very different in the way they handle rehab starts with guys that have to go down and make those starts in order to get back to the big leagues. Some guys look at results. Some teams don't care about results. They're looking at velocity and movement on pitches. Sometimes they're just looking for how a guy feels after he comes out of a start. You know, because let's face it, the numbers that you throw up in the minor leagues don't have anything to do with what you're going to do at the major league level. I like to see some results when you go down for a rehab start and show me that you can get AAA hitters out before you come back to the big leagues. But there are a lot of organizations that could care less about what the numbers look like down there if they feel like you can physically come back and pitch in the big leagues.
And Major League Baseball is in a different place now than it was 10, 15, 30 years ago, just in terms of workloads for guys. But I would also venture to guess, as you know, someone who's always looking for the silver lining as well, that, you know, some time off. Now, granted, it's already the second time that Keuchel's needed a little bit of a break, and he had some injuries last year. But if you can keep that kind of innings total down over the course of the regular season, knowing that you've got such a huge lead in the division and that you're hoping for a lengthy October run, you know, if he could be fresher by October, again, that's the glass half full approach for me.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing to say, but sometimes an injury doesn't hurt you. You know, in the long run, you know, you give a guy a little time off. Now, if I'm a pitcher, I'd rather that guy's injury be, you know, he twisted his ankle or something like that than have it be a pitching arm injury. But at the same time, if you can get those guys a little bit of time off, you know, I can remember a couple of years ago with the Red Sox when Porcello was pitching really poorly, and we kind of joked about it on the pre- and post-game show there that they gave him a vacation, sent him down to Aruba. Really, what they did is send him to the minor leagues. He worked some things out, and then after that, he came back. He was brilliant, and he won the Cy Young the next season. So guys can really benefit from times like that.
Yeah, so that's the story with the Houston Astros. They are, without question, the best team record-wise in the American League. They take a hit with the injury to Carlos Correa, but maybe they will do okay, seeing as they're hoping to get Dallas Keuchel back shortly. So that's the story with the Astros. Giancarlo Stanton is the guy I'm referring to, one of the faces of Major League Baseball right now, and obviously coming off of the All-Star Game and the Home Run Derby and all the young talent that was on display in Miami last week. You've got guys like Stanton, obviously Trout and Harper, who face off in a two-game series in Anaheim these next couple of days. Cody Bellinger and Aaron Judge, who have put themselves not only in the Rookie of the Year mix, but also the MVP discussion. Baseball is in a really good place right now when it comes to young studs. And you just wonder, how can Major League Baseball, a $10 billion industry, so I think they're doing okay and don't need my advice, but how do they continue to capitalize on this next generation of superstar?
Well, I think it's ultimately important that you pump the young stars of the game to make sure that they are well known throughout the country. Obviously, you have to promote teams. You have to promote the uniform, or as Seinfeld used to say, the laundry. Right? What shirt am I cheering for? You have to be able to do that. You have to have the crowd and your fans identify with the team. But within that, you have to let a Red Sox fan be really happy about a Cody Bellinger. You know, they just because they play on the West Coast, those people have to know who Bellinger is and understand his impact on the game. But what I think is funny is how jaded are we as fans of the game that we have guys like Trout and Harper that have been around for a few years that are amazing, and we're already trying to see who the next great players are. I want to hear about Bellinger. I want to know about Aaron Judge. You know what I mean? Here these guys are, in their young 20s, Trout and Harper, you know, each one of them been an all-star every year possible except for one. They've both been MVPs. They were Rookie of the Year. They've done it all, and yet we're still looking for the next great young talent, and guess what? It's there in baseball. It's right there, and it's coming at us.
It absolutely is, and I think that that's maybe even the bigger discussion is like, yeah, it's a fun debate to have between fans and friends and stuff like that of, you know, because it's almost like make a Mount Rushmore of the faces of baseball right about now, because, you know, I've been asked that question a lot, and everybody wants to anoint Aaron Judge, and I'm still looking to figure out whether or not he's going to Cooperstown in a week and a half with Biggio and Pudge and whatnot, but, you know, you're absolutely right. Sometimes we fast forward things so much, and all Trout needed was a banged up thumb and 7.5 weeks off for some people to forget just how great he has been. And I don't think that it's a bad thing if there's more than just one face of baseball, because like you said, you promote the uniform and you promote the various faces. And now you've got these same kind of guys going head to head at the All-Star game every year. And, you know, hopefully for some of these guys in the World Series, and we already kind of recognize them. And again, baseball's at a different spot now than it was when Jeter, let's just say, was the face of baseball. He was able to kind of get to that mantle because of all of the winning and all of the postseason accolades and all of the postseason appearances, really. But nowadays, with MLB Network, with MLB.TV, with all the games that Fox has on the weekends, you know, the accessibility is so much different now that you can be much more familiar with players. And, you know, let's just enjoy it. And some of these guys are already in commercials, and it's only going to be a matter of time before they all are selling some sort of product, and we're all buying it up like crazy.
Yeah, and baseball's lagged way behind in the endorsement market as far as getting the faces of the players out in the mainstream, you know, Madison Avenue kind of stuff. But, you know, what I think is just really, really good for the game is, you know, there's three little boys that live across the street. They're all Red Sox fans, huge Red Sox fans, but the middle kid's about 10 years old, and he is not afraid at all to tell everyone that Manny Machado is his favorite player, and he'll wear a Manny Machado shirt with the Orioles on it, even though he's a huge Red Sox fan. And I just think that that's healthy for the game. It's healthy for the kids and the players and the people that watch it. So, and I think it's good that baseball has kind of made that accessible to all fans. You got to have a favorite team. You should be born into that, but it doesn't keep you or doesn't not allow you to like some of the other players in the game that don't happen to play for your team.
You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, and we'll be right back with more after this.
Between game-winning drives and walk-off home runs, follow TuneIn Sports on social media and get the latest scoop on our great sports shows. From MLB at the Plate to NFL No Huddle, be the first to know about upcoming interviews with some of the biggest stars in sports. Or check out behind-the-scenes coverage that you can't get anywhere else. Like us at TuneIn Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and keep up on all the latest news and happenings from around the world of sports.
This is the MLB at the Plate podcast. Here are your hosts, Paul Severino and Steve Lyons.
There were 15 games on Tuesday, and to bring you up to speed on all the action, we've got the best day ever, home run tracker, and statistically speaking.
Best day ever on MLB at the Plate.
So this is where Steve and I pick our pitcher and our hitter that had a pretty good day. Steve, I'll let you go first. Who you got on the pitcher side of things?
I'm going with Michael Wacha tonight. He goes complete game, throws 119 pitches against the Mets. He got gave up just three hits, and we know the Mets are scuffling a little bit. Well, but Wacha had not pitched all that well, hadn't gone into the seventh very often this season. It was his first complete game. You know I'm a huge Kershaw fan, and he got his 15th win tonight. But tonight the best effort goes to Wacha.
For me, I'm going with Brad Peacock with the Houston Astros. The Astros hadn't lost consecutive games for more than a month, and they obviously didn't with the victory tonight over the Seattle Mariners. 6-2 is the final score there. Brad Peacock, 7 strong innings, 3 hits, and 9 strikeouts for him. So Brad Peacock is my pick for pitcher who had his best day ever. On the hitter side of things, Steve, who you got?
I'm going to go with Chris Davis just because it was a monster night. He had the grand slam. The Baltimore Orioles have been struggling here. They have to turn things around if they think they're going to do anything in that division. 2 home runs, 6 RBIs. They beat Texas 12-1 in this one. But with a nod to Bryce Harper, too, because you and I had talked about how big this matchup could be between Harper and Trout. Harper has already hit a home run. He's got three hits on the night. He tried to stretch a single into a double, almost pulled it off. But he's certainly holding up his end of the bargain on that matchup.
I'm going with a couple of Astros. I had Brad Peacock on the pitcher side of things. I'm going to go with Evan Gattis. A couple of home runs in the victory over the Mariners tonight. So he's got 10 on the season, 41 RBIs. And the Astros, the best team record-wise, and maybe even up and down in terms of stats, too, in the American League, on a day in which they learn that Carlos Correa will be out for them for the next 6 to 8 weeks with a torn thumb ligament. Evan Gattis, a couple of home runs, so that's my guy for best day ever.
You're all right. Astros all the time.
You know what? Yeah, which I don't often do, but I think it worked out that way last night. I was all Nats all the time, so I bounce around. I'm such a gypsy when it comes to this stuff, but anyway, you know, wishy-washy.
Pick who you like.
That's right. Let's go through the home run tracker, even though there are still games in progress.
MLB at the plate, home run tracker.
All right, let's start with the finals and kind of combine this with a little bit of a scoreboard look here with about 12 minutes to go. The Pittsburgh Pirates, a 4-3 win over the Milwaukee Brewers. Home runs for Travis Shaw for Milwaukee, his 21st in a losing effort. Francisco Cervelli and Josh Harrison, 5th for Cervelli and 11th for Harrison. Again, the Buccos win by a run and really helped to make that National League Central much more exciting than perhaps it already was. All Orioles tonight, 12-1 over the Texas Rangers, and it started. First batter of the game was Shin-Soo Choo with a home run, his 13th on the season. After that, Dylan Bundy was good through six innings, and then the Orioles' bats really took over. As Steve mentioned, a couple of home runs for Chris Davis, including a grand slam. Trey Mancini with his 15th home run, and Seth Smith connecting on his 11th, and obviously we've heard Seth Smith's name out there in a lot of trade rumors with the deadline roughly 2 weeks away. Arizona Diamondbacks with an 11-2 victory over the Cincinnati Reds. Home runs in that one. Chris Herman is 8th. Ray Fuentes his 2nd. On the same day that the Arizona Diamondbacks make the news that they have acquired J.D. Martinez, and there was video of him packing his bag, so we'll see just about when he joins the Arizona Diamondbacks. Figure to play some left field for them. Zach Cozart with a home run for the Cincinnati Reds, his 10th, but again in a losing effort. Philadelphia Phillies, a 5-2 winner over the Miami Marlins. Mikel Franco with his 14th home run. Nick Williams with his 3rd. This guy has been just red hot the last couple of weeks. Speaking of red hot, Giancarlo Stanton with his 29th home run. That was a first inning shot off of Vince Velasquez. But Stanton home run, not much else offensively for the Miami Marlins. The St. Louis Cardinals shut out the New York Mets 5-0. No home runs on either side for those two teams, but a win nonetheless for the Cardinals, who continue to play some pretty good baseball. No home runs in Chicago either on the south side at Guaranteed Rate Field, but the Dodgers pick up the victory, 1-0 the score. Clayton Kershaw, 7 innings, 7 strikeouts. The guy's 15-2 with a 2.07 ERA. I think he's pretty darn good. The Yankees, speaking of the White Sox, Yankees and White Sox getting together on a deal. Again, still waiting to see whether or not that becomes official before we get off the air. But the Yankees win the game in Minnesota 6-3. They get a home run from Didi Gregorius, his 12th, and Miguel Sano, his first home run since the runner-up in the Home Run Derby, home run number 22 for Miguel Sano. In Houston, no home runs for Seattle as they fall to the Astros 6-2, but a pair from Evan Gattis. Again, he's up to 10 on the year. The Detroit Tigers with a 9-3 victory, again, on the same day that they trade away J.D. Martinez and perhaps begin what could be something of a fire sale. Maybe. That might be stretching it a bit, but as they begin to turn the page. Nicholas Castellanos with a couple of home runs. He's up to 14 on the year, and no home runs for Kansas City. Again, that's a 9-3 Detroit Tigers final. Those are your finals. The game's still in progress, and again, there are 6 of them still going on right now. In extra innings in Boston, it is 3-3. Jays and Red Sox are tied up. No home runs for the Toronto Blue Jays, but a home run for Chris Young of the Boston Red Sox, his 5th. Dustin Pedroia also connecting on home run number 5. Again, that game in extras at Fenway Park. About an hour and a half rain delay before the start of play between the Cubs and the Braves. It's a 4-1 lead for the Chicago Cubs right now. Javier Baez, his 11th. Wilson Contreras, number 13. Nick Markakis with his 5th home run. Again, 4-1, but the Cubs threatening for more with the bases loaded in the 6th inning. Rockies with a 9-7 lead right now, top of the 9th inning at home. Will Myers, this is where he hit his cycle, was in Colorado. He connected on home run today, his 17th of the season. Carlos Asuaje with number one. And for the Rockies, Mark Reynolds, number 20. This guy is having one heck of a season to go along with a .287 batting average. Pretty good year for Mark Reynolds as the Rockies are currently in front right now, counting down the outs before they perhaps get back in the win column. It's a 3-2 A's lead on the Tampa Bay Rays out in Oakland. That game is now into the top of the seventh. Steven Souza Jr. with his 20th home run of the season, and Chris Davis with a K, his 27th home run. That came off of Blake Snell. So that, again, is a 3-2 A's lead in the seventh. Bottom of the sixth inning right now in Anaheim, and this was our game of the night for good reason with Harper and Trout matching up. And not to disappoint at all, Bryce Harper in his first at-bat goes deep for his 24th home run. And not to be outdone, Mike Trout connecting on his first at-bat, number 17 for him. Martin Maldonado has also added a home run, number 10, and that is why the Angels have a 2-1 lead. In the bottom of the sixth, it's the Indians with a 1-0 lead on the San Francisco Giants. No home runs as of yet as the Cleveland Indians try to figure things out. Again, they got the win last night in San Francisco to get their first win of the second half as they hold off the rest of the competition in the American League Central. So that is your home run tracker in terms of the, yeah, I know, right?
You need a sandwich after a rip like that.
I need a sandwich, I need a sip of water, and I need a breath. And thanks for calling me out because you just gave me all of that right there.
That was
Mike Trout had the longest homer of the day at 448 feet, the hardest hit ball at the moment. Steven Souza Jr. at 113 miles off the bat, hardest hit homer, that is. We also have, statistically speaking, run through some fun stats here. Bartolo Colon, still alive and kicking, struck out Aaron Judge on an 86.4-mile-per-hour fastball, the second slowest fastball that Judge has ever struck out on. Really? That's what we're counting. It's terrific.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
We can count anything these days.
So what, did Ziegler throw him a slower one?
No, it was Kyle Hendricks at 85.6. Oh, isn't that something? A couple of D-backs notes here. Nine different Diamondbacks have an extra base hit or had an extra base hit tonight. Franchise record for a single game. And then they also scored six-plus runs in an inning nine times this season. That's tied for the most in baseball. Did it five times all of last year. Giancarlo Stanton with a home run. Mentioned that is 29th. With his ninth home run this month, though, he set the Marlins record for home runs in the month of July. So, I mean, I think he's already their franchise leader in home runs, but he's now we're going like by month with this guy. He's just that good. And Nicholas Castellanos, the fourth Tiger since 1913 with a single, a triple, and two or more home runs in a game. So,
wow, that's what's that, a weird cycle?
That's the odd cycle. And one more note here because it's Clayton Kershaw. His 52nd career start of at least seven scoreless innings. Tom Glavine had 54, Pedro Martinez 57. Glavine and Pedro already in Cooperstown, and I like Kershaw's chances of getting there someday as well.
Kershaw's flat out unbelievable. He always has been. He's a better guy than he is a pitcher, too.
And he could retire tomorrow and still end up in Cooperstown.
Yep.
So it's certainly amazing. That's it for the MLB at the Plate podcast. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn at 7 Eastern each weeknight for MLB at the Plate. During the daily 5-hour show, you'll not only be able to hear all of what you heard in this podcast, but you'll also have the chance to listen to live games and get all the action as it happens. For Abe and Dustin in the LA studio and Steve Lines alongside me, Paul Severino saying thanks so much, and we'll catch you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. Tune in, your everything audio app.